America. 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 You are so grand and golden. Oh, I wish I was deep in America tonight.
Welcome to Tongue in Cheek on Wave Farm, broadcasting from Montez at 46 Canal. I'm Emma McCormick Goodhart with Timothy Simmons.
Hey.
David Dixon is our guest, and Aaron Lehman
is our spirit.
Yes. Thank you for tuning in. This episode is Waste Voice.
Oh, America, you are so grand and golden. I wish I was on the next flight to America. Captain Christofferson.
All right. So starting today, the focus of today is going to be on the waist or below the waist. I call it Waste Voice. We already have David giggling.
Yeah, I'm here for comic relief.
But I might call it the prehensile toe.
The prehensile toe.
Yes.
What is? Oh, the laugh. The chuckle or the below the waist?
The waist voice as manifest.
Cool.
Through the base of the body.
What'd you call it?
The prehensile toe.
Prehensile toe.
Yeah.
That's nice. We're going to get down to the toes soon. But I think as a way to start off focusing on our hips and the area of the waist, we'll do something that's going to require standing. So those of you that are not standing or can't stand, you can sort of visualize this with us. But first, standing up. Ideally, with some barrier in front of you, that could be a fence, it could be a desk like we have in front of us. Ideal, some flat surface in front of you. So very first thing, just put your palms sort of where your pockets are, close to the sort of a placement of your hips or where there's maybe some tension already. And pushing back towards your butt with your palms, allow your torso to tilt slightly forward so the top of you is just a little bit off balance. And then release your palms and reach forward. And extend, allowing your abdomen to tighten a bit while you're off balance. Now try to bring slowly your arms back, keeping this little crook in your hips over a desk or over some surface. And your breath might be tense like mine is. So try to just breathe and ease even though you're in this tight position. Once you sort of catch a steady breath, see if you can notice if there's any movement in your upper torso hinging at your hips. If it helps, put your hands to the sides of your hips and try to visualize your hips as a hinge a hinge between your body below your waist and your body above your waist, which is in tension over this table. Breathe in and see if you move. Breathe out and see if you move. What's natural? When you breathe out, are you falling forward? Or when you breathe out, are you coming backwards? Now try to introduce some kind of voice into this breath. Can be a vowel sound. It can be even a consonant.
Or an off.
Try articulating the breath with a consonant rather than dragging one out.
Cool.
Through the length of your breath, are you moving forwards in this tension on your hinge or uprighting yourself? Just come upright to remind yourselves what it is to stand upright. And put your hands back at your hips. Loosen your knees a little bit. It just takes a little jiggling and shaking. And now with your hands to the side of your hips, imagine where that hinge was. Maybe it was just a sort of tense block, but start to think of it as a hinge. What would it be if there was an axle running from hip to hip? An axle running from your right hip to your left hip, across your pelvis. How would it allow you not to move from left to right at all, but in any fixing of balance, only moving forward and back? Close your eyes and try to imagine this as this titanium bar straight across your hips, splitting your body into two parts. Every push off balance gets redirected forward and back, never side to side. A couple more sways. And in these sways, now open your eyes if you had them closed. And while you maintain this axle, start to look a little bit around the room, turning your neck, but keeping your hips straight. And imagine what would happen if this axle started to extend on either side of your hips, out as far as it can go. Maybe 5 feet on one side, maybe 2 feet on another. This heavy barbell of an axle. How do you have to sway to keep this long extended axle from hitting any surface? Keeping it from clacking against the wall, the ceiling, or the floor. Thanks, David.
You're welcome, Tim.
Do you want to tell us a bit about what you were just doing?
Yeah, that's called the mouth harp or the juice harp or the jaw harp or the juju. Or it's got a whole list of names, which I think are long because it's an old instrument that's been around since the 2nd century or something like that. And it's cross-cultural, so it's hard the names are various. Consequently, so it's hard to find the source, let's say, for the name or the instrument itself. But it's still popular in folk music in Sicily. I know that because I was there this summer.
Oh.
And
there are some strong resonances in Sicilian spaces, like the Ear of Dionysius Cave. I wonder if that has anything to do with
their interest in this instrument.
Yes.
It's very possible.
You mean like the mouth of a cave? Kind of being.
Well, this one was actually like an auditory panopticon. It was used as a prison, so that prisoners who were kept in the cave could be overheard from above.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
interesting. I didn't go there.
Next time.
Yeah, and the odd thing was, I saw this instrument on a poster while walking down the street somewhere in Palermo, along with other sort of national symbols or Sicilian tourist sort of locations, and then there was this object just on there with all these sights, and it seemed sort of out of place but surprising, because I had gotten one of these from my grandfather when I was like 10 years old, and he showed me how to play it, which I can show you as well if you'd like to learn.
Can you tell,
it was really a surprise, frankly, to see it there. I don't know anything about it, frankly. What I've said so far, I just read last night online, so anybody could look it up. But we need to tell them what the instrument is or describe it in some way.
Mm.
Yeah, that would be great.
Since it can't see
what does it look like?
Yeah, what does it look like? What does it look like?
A tuning fork, it reminds me of.
A tuning fork with like a little reed in the center, which can be bamboo, apparently, or this one's steel or metal of some sort.
A little like dental instruments.
Yeah, and you hold it against your teeth.
Right.
Which is kind of the difficult... I can't play any instrument but this one. Not that I can even play this one, but it's pretty. But you have to figure out how to hold it against your teeth. That's the only trick.
Yeah. Can you? Let's finish describing it a bit, and then I was wondering if you could talk about your first encounter with it.
Yes.
With your grandfather.
Exactly. So it's kind of circular shaped, and there's a body to it that's circular shaped, and then it has two sort of thongs coming off of it, and that are all the rigid part of the instrument. That's small. You know, you hold it in your hand against your teeth, so it's not very large. And then down the center of those two prongs is the reed that you sort of strum that creates the vibrations and sounds. And I was not playing it very well there because you can hear it clicking. You shouldn't be able to hear it clicking. And
where does the clicking come from?
From it hitting the sides of these little arms. Mm. It shouldn't hit those arms, I don't think. I don't know if this is properly tuned. And sometimes it doesn't do it when I'm...
Wait, so you're holding it sideways. With the sort of wide hip parts on the side of your mouth.
So you get a variety of sounds, partially from breathing in and out, which goes through your mouth and through the reed, but then also strumming it, you know, gives it the rhythm.
Can you isolate one of those?
But you can. They make harmonies with these, which I can't really do just by changing the shape of your mouth. You know, I always thought it was just a rhythmic thing, but you can actually do harmonies with
can
it.
Can you isolate just breathing in and just
oh yeah,
in, just so we can hear?
It doesn't make any noise. I'm discovering this now. It doesn't make any noise unless you strum this thing, and then when you do that, you can get those extra little, you know. So that's just adaptive breathing. And that's what they're eating. And then, yesterday, I discovered while doing my research that if you hold it differently, it creates a deeper sound. So I think mine's a little bit small for this, but they have larger ones. But if you hold your hand backwards around it, it's and sort then of, you strum I mean, it backwards, it makes a deeper sound.
So it's sort of like the shape almost like a mandolin or something, where there's you're actually making the cavity.
Does that sound different?
Yes.
Sorry, it's harder to play this way because I can't really hold it. It's not big enough, I don't think. This is the way the Sicilians do it, though. But funny, it's Sicilian, but to me it sounds a little like sort of Irish jig-like. I mean, it's a real countrified instrument. So, yeah, I think they use it down there, you know, in the Ozarks.
How did you come across it first?
Exactly. So my grandfather, you know, who's older than we are. So back in the early 20th century, he always had all these kind of things from back in the day. So he pulled this thing out when I was like 10 years old and started playing it, and it's kind of fascinating to see. Never seen it before. And so he being who he was pretty funny. He would just do that, you know, he'd go, here's how you do it. And then he'd hand it to me, and then I would try to do it. Okay, Tim, now it's your turn. I have two here. I have a smaller one. That one's harder to play because it's small.
Me?
Yeah. So he'd do it like, just do it. That's how you play it. And you're like, my teeth. And he did that for like an hour, but would never tell me any more information than, this is how you do it. And then he'd hand it to me. And then my teeth would just get clunked like you're doing. And then he'd be like, no, this is how you do it.
Wait, so you have to keep your teeth together?
Yeah, you have to keep your teeth together. And you hold it tightly against your teeth.
Where's the metal rigid parts?
There's a ridge in the back, yeah.
Between the lips and against the teeth.
Yeah, you can kind of do it without the lips. But that's how you got to hold it against
the front of your teeth. There's two stiff things that are parallel.
Yeah,
right?
Those are the arms coming out.
And I put my upper teeth on one of them and my lower on the other.
You kind of put it on the front of your teeth, not between them.
Well, I have a big gap.
You do have some funky teeth, boy. But that's what we love about you. It's part of your charm. Oh, yeah. It's happening. I hear it.
Is that good?
I think that's good, yeah. And here, you want to try this one? It's a little bit easier to play this one. We're blood brothers here. Oh, yeah, one.
Tasty.
Yeah. Nothing like steel.
But so I'm keeping my teeth separated.
Keep your teeth, yeah, it's more or less on the front of your teeth.
So that the reed can, because the reed has to
move
go
between
past
them,
your teeth.
Right, exactly. Right. Other way you get that clinking sound. See, and you're looking at this right now. It's just a way to do it. You can also do it this way.
What is it like to...
Well, it's your turn.
To hear yourself playing, does it have a bone conductive effect?
Oh, well, that's the part. That's why we're here, right, Tim? You want to talk about that? The real sound comes from... I mean, it basically turns your skull into the resonance. So, I mean, if you play it without holding in your teeth, it makes no sound really. So it's really your skull's vibrating.
All right, and you can totally feel it.
Yeah, you can feel it. After a while, your teeth start to hurt, even if you do it correctly.
You're going to start with this one, Emma?
That one's easier to play.
Okay.
Yeah, this one's really old, I think. So they run for, like, I looked up, you know, they're not, you know, $50 or something. Not super cheap. But they have, like, specialists making these things.
A little bit more in front. It has to rest, I think. So the actual shape of these two metal hard things are...
Now you do it like this.
Mm.
That?
Yeah.
Wow, she's a quick learner.
Is it against your teeth?
You don't even have it against your teeth, though, do you? Maybe you're not supposed to put it next to your teeth. That looks pretty, what you're doing there. Maybe I've got it wrong.
Try resting it on your teeth. No, the other way.
This is a really messed up one. It's all out of whack. It's too small.
So
fascinating.
So it's actually resonating through your teeth. It's resonating your head.
Your skull, yeah.
And maybe in another way, like using your whole skull as a mouth.
Yeah, sure. Oh, that's a nice transition, Tim.
The etymology of articulation. Early 15th century. A joint or joining, setting of bones.
So now we're going to move through some resonators. I use the word resonators because that's actually kind of borrowing from a Polish theater director, Jerzy Grotowski. And like I said to David before of this instrument, which, what are we calling it? We can call it many different things.
Let's call it a jaw harp.
Jaw harp. Okay. So the jaw harp, like it's resonating or articulating through our skull, through speaking through our skull. Jerzy Grotowski was thinking about, or one way that he was thinking about voice in the body was through what were called resonators. Resonators could be anywhere, in a way. And when we spoke, and when we speak in the theater, not we necessarily, I'm not in the theater, but for him, when we speak in the theater, the voice is not necessarily located where we might normally think, coming out of the mouth that's below our nose. But the mouth or these resonators can be throughout the body. So we're going to actually just do, quite quickly, we're going to move through from head to toe, kind of going through some resonators, some of them that come from Grotowski, others that are just, you know, coming from us. And I'll try to give some pointers as a way of getting into this and feeling this, because I don't know if you have a jaw harp. So starting with a head resonator, let's just start. We're going to do this all together until we have this sensation, and hopefully that means that you on the other end will also have this sensation. I think for all of these, it's going to help to stand. Later, we're going to take off our shoes, but you can take them off now if you want. So standing softly, we're starting with the head resonator. So find a sound like this, an M, prolonging an M. A head resonator, we want to end up feeling actually on the crown of our head, towards the very top of our head. It's helpful to do two things, I find. One is give yourself a really slight smile while you're and a very gentle furrow of your brow, just as if you're looking up. Also, following Grotowski, we might send our voice or push our voice up as if we're speaking to the ceiling with the top of our head, using our other hand. So we're really thinking, like, how do we use the top of our head as the mouth? Mm-hmm. Usually the head resonator works with the higher register, so if you need to go a little higher with your M, try that. Until you find some kind of vibration in the top of your head. Do we get something?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Thrumming.
Tickles.
Just something from Eugenio Barba, who was heavily influenced and worked with Grotowski and started his... Well, we're going to play some things from Barba, from his theater in Denmark later. They said, when using this resonator, one must have the sensation that the mouth is situated at the top of the head. So now let's just move very close down to an N. Nasal resonator. So instead of there being this vibration on the crown of our head, as if our mouth is on the top of our head, this is going to get easier, you might not feel it yet. Now think about, how do we resonate with our nose? So just start with it. You can start with an N. Wait, Dave just gave me a wet napkin.
Yeah, you're sniffing on.
Oh, you know, sorry.
It's not. It's not very professional.
Okay. So an N. Try to tickle. Feel the tickle in your nose. Might help to have something right in front of you so you feel like you're speaking straight out of your nose. Switch quickly back to the M so you feel the difference. And then N. Sing. Try sing, sing, sing. Might sound a little Broadway because this is used help. It's very helpful for projecting things. Sing, sing. Sing, sing, sing. Everybody feel a little bit of tickle? If you have nose hair, then you feel them tickle. David?
I don't have any nose hair.
Well, I do, so I have to. So, top of the head speaking, not nasal. So then there's the larynx, and we'll let this go for a second, because as Grotowski and Barba say, and Towards a Poor Theater, Louis Armstrong was one of the best at this.
Baby.
Sorry to cut that off. So we're skipping over larynx, and we're going to chest. So imagine, you know, moving down from send your hand up. Sing, sing, and then now try like under where maybe upper chest. And now let's try to move down. I think David's already doing it. Let's try to move to stomach. What would that be? I have something like what sound do you have to make to feel it in your stomach? As if your mouth is there. Not totally having figured that out. Let's keep going. Hips. I'll let you go. Close your eyes to try to really try to visualize. We had focus on our hips before. Now moving down even further. Keep your eyes closed. How do we get towards our knees? And towards our toes.
Gait is the physiognomy of the body. Balzac, Theory of the Gait.
Here are a few quick quotes from Suzuki, Tadashi Suzuki, who's a still active, I believe, theater director, who's, I think, I've been very taken by because of his text, Feet Grammar, The Grammar of the Feet. But he has a wonderful book, The Way of Acting. And before I play this other thing that actually kind of goes back to Grotowski and Eugenio Barba, I wanted to read this. Gesture is tied intimately to the words being spoken. Words represent human gesture. There can be no words spoken that are not intimately connected to bodily sensations and rhythms.
And then this, by Gregory of Nyssa, who lived 335 AD to 394 AD. He writes, "So it was thanks to the manner in which our bodies are organized that our mind, like a musician, struck the note of language within us, and we became capable of speech. This privilege would surely never have been ours if our lips had been required to perform the onerous and difficult task of procuring nourishment for our bodies. But our hands took over that task, releasing our mouths for the service of speech."
La mano con la voce è di far emergere il suo discorso da quella parte del corpo che è più vicino alla mia mano. Solo questo, tenere la mia mano con la sua voce e rispondere ai movimenti della mia mano, cioè reagire alle sue azioni.
Just to translate that quickly, that's Eugenio Barba with Jens Christensen from the Danish theater group Odin Teatr. And he's asking, he's standing in front of Jens Christensen and asking him to hold his hand, hold Eugenio's hand with Jens' voice. And he's going to move his, sort of similar to what we were doing, he's going to move, Eugenio Barba is going to move his hand around, up and down Jens' body and in the space around. And Jens' voice will be moving then through his body, his mouth almost moving along his body in order to speak to that hand or to hold that hand.
To speak with the aura of the voice.
Yeah.
Se nu var foran alle det gået mig i stedet for, jeg former hende og giver hende skikkelse, er det hende, der former mig og giver mig skikkelse. Hun har sine hænder omkring mit hjerte og gør det frit og gør mig tom. Forført mig til døden, og med mig dør min drøm, den skønne figur. Billedet af Eva, moren, jeg ser det nu, og hvis jeg har kræfter i hænderne, kunne jeg forme det, men hun ønsker det ikke, hun vil ikke, jeg skal gøre hendes hemmelighed synlig, hun vil hellere, jeg skal dø. Og jeg dør gerne, hun gør mig det lidt se nu, og forunderligt det er gået mig, i stedet for, at jeg former hende. Giver hende skikkelse, er det hende, der former mig og giver mig skikkelse. Hun har sine hænder omkring mit hjerte og gør det frit og gør mig tom, forført mig til døden. Med mig dør også min drøm, den skønne figur, billedet af Eva, moren. Jeg ser det nu, og hvis jeg har kræfter i hænderne, kunne jeg forme det. Men hun ønsker det ikke, hun vil ikke, at jeg skal gøre hendes hemmelighed synlig. Hun vil hellere, at jeg skal dø, og jeg dør gerne, hun kommer det lidt. Se nu, hvor forunderligt det er gået mig, i stedet for, at jeg former hende og giver hende skikkelse. Er det hende, der former mig og giver mig skikkelse? Hun har sine hænder omkring mit hjerte. Hun vil hellere, at jeg skal dø, og jeg dør gerne, hun gør mig det lidt.
In some way it looks like conducting, but then it starts to change, and it really feels like, and looks like, and hears like, sounds like, hears like, sounds like the voice is emanating from different parts of the body.
Voice
of the top of the head.
The distributed voice. Voice without a source.
Voice of the back of the head. Mouth of the shoulder. Mouth of the upper back.
Orbit.
Mouth of the lower spine.
One of the most momentous events in the history of life was the acquisition of skeletons.
Back to mouth of the back of the head. Top of the head. Mouth of the brow.
Ingestion.
So now let's take our shoes off if we haven't taken them off already. As Suzuki has said, actors, because they must wear shoes to perform, have in a manner of speaking lost their feet. So shoes off. So now we're going to focus, I think, for the rest of the episode on our feet. Probably one of the hardest places to have relocated our mouth to. But I found when we kind of moved so weirdly past the hips, at least my voice wanted to get higher again. It was as if, yes, I was going back and into an upper register the closer I got to my feet, or the further yeah, away from my hips I got.
Yeah.
Even if it was seemed like a more suppressed and a very moving down voice, it was still of a higher register.
And more tenuous too.
Yeah. So that's why I kind of like the idea of starting with a hinge, because it's almost like, in the end, we're just sort of folding our body over. So our head is equivalent to our toes. Or the top of our head voice is like our toe voice.
Right.
Our knee voice is like our chest voice. And the waist voice is all the same.
Each part a kind of antennae.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just get a feel of our feet. Very first thing to do is try to touch the ground with every bit of each of your feet. If you're wearing shoes, like you're driving, you can't have taken your shoes off, then you can do this maybe with your left foot, not on the gas pedal, with your left foot in the sole of your shoe, on the insole of your shoe. But otherwise, we're rolling our foot around, trying to get every bit of our foot to make contact with the ground. How can you almost get the in-between, the skin in between your toes to touch the ground? How can you get, if you have high arches, that arch to touch the ground? The pinky toe around the hard parts and the soft parts, rolling. And now turn this a little bit more into a movement and try, while you're rolling and making contact with all parts, imagine you're sort of cleaning the floor with your feet.
Makes clear how many curves there are, in fact, on the base of the foot.
Continue cleaning. And now lift your heels while you're cleaning. So you're just cleaning with your toes.
Relevé.
The
This might mean that your knees bend a little bit. Let your knees bend even more.
Fall back into our invertebrate past.
So invertebrate that you start to feel like a puppet, with your knees bent and your toes cleaning the floor as if there are two strings at the tops of your knees dragging your legs around.
アメリカの4つの劇団が共同制作する舞台の演出を鈴木忠に移植。シェイクスピアの作品をもとに鈴木自身が構成したものです。このリア王に登場する俳優は12人、すべてアメリカの俳優で、女の役も男優が演じます。アメリカの4つの劇団から選ばれた12人の俳優たちは昨年トガ村で合宿、鈴木メソードによる厳しい訓練を経てリア王に取り組みました。アメリカ各地の公演では8万人もの観客を集め、このトガフェスティバルにやってきました。
Those were Tadashi Suzuki actors practicing for Tale of Lear in the mid-80s, 1986. Okay, so last two exercises of the day.
However, they were wearing socks.
They were wearing socks. Are you wearing socks?
Oops.
Okay, last two exercises of the day. This one we'll try to get straight into. I'm going to play a piece of opera, an aria that was recommended to me by Bella, and it's one of her favorites, and I've been listening to it for the first part of the day. It's Lady Macbeth in Verdi's Macbeth, which was originally performed in 1865. This recording is from 2013, and I'm going to play a bit of this. I'm going to have it go already. I'm going to play a part of this aria. Let it go in the background because she starts a little bit later. And when the voice starts, I want you to imagine what this vocalist's feet look like. How are they moving? What subtle movements do they have? Nothing dramatic. Some of Verdi might be very dramatic. This is Macbeth, after all. She is sleepwalking. But something very, very subtle while she sings. I'll get us there in a second. Coming very soon. So just try to visualize in the first half minute what these feet look like as the voice emanates, wherever it might be emanating from.
remember, nothing dramatic. Close your eyes and look at the feet. Okay, I know it's cruel, but I'm going to start again. And this time, I want you to emulate what you see these feet to be doing very subtly. Once again, start again, trying to visualize what these feet are doing by moving your own feet. Here we go. Subtle. Even there, subtle. Subtle movements. How to sing with the feet.
Sing into subterranean space.
Singing to the floor below you. Now start to exaggerate whatever movement you're finding to sing with your feet. Keep moving your feet. Keep mouthing with your feet.
Personae of the feet.
Keep moving your feet. Only with the voice.
Rest is the silence of the body.
Your feet are no instrument besides the voice.
Tadashi Suzuki, The Grammar of the Feet, In the Way of Acting, 1986. Grotowski, Towards a Poor Theatre.
Louis Armstrong, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, 1929. Bill Callahan, America, 2011. Smog, The Well, 2005. Anna Netrebko, Una Macchia e Chi Tutoro, as Lady Macbeth in Verdi's Macbeth, 2013, 1865. Eugenio Barba, Jens Christensen, and others from Odin Theatret in vocal training at Odin Theatret by Torgeir Vetal, 1972. Kondo Shiro, Conversations About the Feet. A Provocation to Think With. Gill to larynx.